Hello, and welcome to AARC Perspectives, where we talk with members of the respiratory care community and learn about their experiences caring for patients and building the profession. I am Doug Lair, Chief Operating Officer at the American Association for Respiratory Care, and I will serve as your host for today's episode. Since 1947, the AARC has been leading the effort to advance the respiratory care profession and promote high-quality, cost-effective, patient-centric respiratory care. The respiratory care profession is ever-growing and evolving thanks to dedicated respiratory therapists around the world. Joining me today on AARC Perspectives podcast is Dr. Mary Martinasek. Dr. Martinasek is a registered respiratory therapist and a public health professor at the University of Tampa. Her research over the past decade has focused on novel smoking behaviors among young adults, including hookah and vaping. Her most recent publication focused on adverse childhood experiences and vaping and is one of the content experts on this topic in the country. Ladies and gentlemen, enjoy my conversation with Mary. Well, good morning, Mary. Welcome to AARC Perspectives Podcast. How are you today?
I'm doing wonderful. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Fantastic. So we brought you on because we view you as one of the content experts in the U.S. as a respiratory therapist, probably any healthcare provider, we'll just say that, as it relates to vaping, to public health as it relates to vaping and tobacco use. So we're really excited that you're here with us today. Just so, you know, we've already provided our audience a little bit of a background on you, but hearing it in your own words, I think oftentimes helps people appreciate the context of who you are and your expertise. So I'll give the floor to you and I'll let you share with our audience a little bit about yourself.
Okay, thank you. So I've had an interesting journey and it's been a lengthy journey. I actually wasn't sure what I wanted to do for my career. And my father was a physician and said, you know, let's go talk to the high school guidance counselor, introduced me to inhalation therapy. And I actually shadowed a therapist in Gainesville, Florida, and decided this is something I might be interested in, got into the field and worked everything. Adults, like most therapists, right? We start with adults and we work in with pediatrics and then we find our niche. And so I worked with neonatal patients for the majority of the time. And then after about a couple of decades of doing that, I went into teaching respiratory therapy at a local community college because I felt like I had enough information and knowledge behind me that I could actually help those that are trying to get into the career. And after teaching for a while, I thought, I really like this and I like research. So I went and got my master's in public health at the University of South Florida. And my thesis was focused on an interactive asthma education program at a summer asthma camp. So everything I do has been centered around respiratory health because, you know, I've spent decades working with respiratory patients and it's been super valuable. Following that, I got my dissertation in public health because I wanted to have a bigger impact on the work that I do, the research that I do. And my research for my dissertation was focused on hookah smoking among college students. So perfect opportunity, a perfect audience, because at that time, hookah was really starting to populate neighborhoods around college campuses and was really the novel behavior that college students were focused on. So from that point, I teach at the University of Tampa, but my research has been focused on trying to stay up with the current behaviors that youth and young adults are doing. So we've kind of segued, even though hookah is still there, segued into vaping and what's going on with the vape devices and how they're utilized, why students vape them, what the behaviors are like. And so it's challenging because, right, every week we see something new out there, a new article or some new research that keeps us on our toes.
And really, the literature that's being published out there is one of the reasons why we brought you on today, and we'll get into that in just a minute. As it relates to teen and young adult vaping, I was just hopeful that you could talk a little bit about the harm that comes with that. Is it a safer alternative than tobacco smoking?
So great question. And I always sort of pause and say, well, you know, with a question like that, is it focused on an individual who is trying to quit smoking cigarettes? Or is it focused on that question on teens, youth, young adults who have never tried tobacco or they're not addicted to cigarettes? Because it's really two different answers. So if you're looking at, let's say, a college student who has been smoking cigarettes for a couple of years and they take up the vape device to try and help them quit smoking. Well, we have those, right? So I counsel students, college students, in quitting smoking, or quitting vaping now, but quitting smoking. And there are evidence-based programs out there, right? As respiratory therapists, we know about the nicotine replacement therapies and quit coach counseling. We do it in hospitals. We do it in communities. And, you know, we advocate for that because it's evidence-based. But we know that the vape has helped people quit smoking cigarettes. It's just really hard as a respiratory therapist and a tobacco treatment specialist to really advocate for that because of what's going on, the regulation, right? There's very lack of regulation, and these devices are exploding in pockets. They're exploding in people's mouths. So as a tobacco treatment specialist and respiratory therapist, I don't really want to push people in that direction. I don't deny them of that opportunity if they choose to go that route, but I hesitate to advocate for it because of the fact that if I actually recommended it and it were to explode, then is it on me for making that recommendation? So for a cigarette smoker, yes, I think it's less harmful if it doesn't explode. And I think it has less chemicals than what we see with cigarettes. We know that from the research. I think it's really difficult for cigarette smokers to quit with it because of the fact that it has so much nicotine. Some of the products have extremely high levels of nicotine. Now, let me take it to the other side, and that is the youth, young adults, college students, adults who've never, or maybe they've tried cigarettes, but they're not addicted to cigarettes. They're not actually using the product to help them quit smoking. They're taking it on for many of the college students because they want that nicotine hit. They want that buzz. They want that pick-me-up that nicotine gives, right? Because nicotine is biphasic. It lifts you up and it kind of relaxes you. So they're looking for the effect. And for these individuals, especially those under the age of 25, is sort of that biggest concern because their brains are not fully developed. And what we know about nicotine and what we're seeing is that it sort of rewires, if you will, that the prefrontal cortex of the brain that's underdeveloped. And it's affecting, or it's going to definitely affect, memory, all of those things that are happening in the prefrontal cortex, cognition, decision making. So we don't know long term what the negative effects are going to be with regards to that. But, you know, as I talk to college students, I say, you know, it's kind of like you're a rat in a cage, right? And we're going to follow you if you continue this behavior over time, and we're going to see what those negative effects are. We're not advocating for you to continue, but, you know, if you choose to continue the behavior, we're going to see long-term these longitudinal studies of what are those negative cognitive effects of vaping. And I think that, to me, is one of the biggest concerns, is long term, what is it doing to the brain of these individuals?
Yeah, Mary, when we right before we jumped on the podcast, we had a brief conversation, and I shared a story with you about Patrick Reynolds. Patrick Reynolds is the great 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 grandson, I think, of R.J. Reynolds, and he's an individual who has turned his back on the family of tobacco, and is actually a big advocate of a smoke free America. And he was our keynote speaker, I believe, in 2015 at AARC Congress, and he was on stage and somebody asked him, is vaping safer than tobacco smoking. And he said something to the effect of, it may be safer, but it's not safe. It might be jumping out of a seventh story building versus a 10 story building. Do you subscribe to that thought, or do we just simply don't know enough at the moment?
Yeah, I think it's sort of like I had mentioned earlier, it's an interesting analogy that he has. And I think so we don't know all of the chemicals that are in these devices. We know that young adults and even adults are adding other things to these vape devices. So it's sort of like a moving target. Can we say that at this point, what we know in the literature, that it is as harmful as cigarettes? No, I don't think it is as harmful as cigarettes, because we don't have 5,000 chemicals like we have seen in cigarettes. But it's more harmful if it's exploding. Cigarettes don't necessarily explode, right? So it's kind of depending on where you're looking at, you know, what you're looking at. We do know that these youth and young adults are actually segueing from vaping to cigarette smoking. So, you know, although it may not be as harmful in some respects, it's actually sort of a open door and pushing them towards cigarette smoking, which we've been battling for years and years. And finally, we're getting the rates down to where it's manageable. So, you know, I think, 10th floor versus 5th floor, I think the point is it's still harmful. It's still harmful. And we're still learning a lot about those harms. So it's not harm free. And I think that's one of the key messages that we need to get out to the community, because some of these kids still see it as just vapor. They just think we're inhaling vapor and it's not really going to have a negative effect on their bodies.
Interesting. Before we get into this this article, which really drove the reason to bring you on today, I have one more quick question. And a number of caregivers, even a handful of patients, have suggested to me that they don't ever believe that vaping will be a successful alternative to tobacco smoking or a mechanism to help quit, because of the stigma that comes with the hand-to-mouth action, that it just is going to be difficult for people who have looked at this as just some terrible action over the course of history. Do you subscribe to that?
So interesting. So I think one of the things you said was stigma. And so definitely, right, we're seeing that with cigarette smokers. You know, even I know when I see somebody smoking a cigarette, instead of walking by them, I'm going to make a 20-foot loop around them, you know, and I don't want to be exposed to them. And I'm probably not unlike a lot of other people where, you know, we don't really want to be around those cigarette smokers because we know all of the harms of it. You know, vaping, it's really hard to project and to guess what the future will hold. I wish I had the magic ball. I wish I had the cure all for smokers, but the rates are extremely high right now. And I think it's a novel behavior. I think a lot of people are doing it. Will it help people quit smoking? Will we see people move from cigarettes to vaping? We're not seeing it right now. And actually, a lot of studies that are happening at tobacco treatment centers around our state of Florida, they're trying to get people who are dual users. They're smoking cigarettes and they're vaping off of the cigarettes and just to the vape, and then hopefully off of the vape. So it's so prevalent everywhere. It's more prevalent than I feel like smoking was when it was so popular, you know, in the 1950s, 60s, 70s. I really can't tell you what's going to happen. And a lot of it may be reflected by regulation. So the FDA trying to ban the Juul, the FDA trying to ban these products. So I think it may be a product of regulation. But then when you've got policy, you have big tobacco involved and you have these companies that are fighting for it. So I hate to say who knows, but, you know, that's really what's going to happen. It's going to be this pot of policy regulations. It's going to be a pot of how strong big tobacco is, because big tobacco still has a handhold in this vape industry. And so does the independent vape industry itself.
Interesting. Wow. We could probably talk hours about this. This is fascinating stuff. So the big reason that we wanted to bring you on today was to talk about a recent article that was published in Tobacco Use Insights by the University of Georgia College of Public Health that really looked at vaping as it relates to adolescents and young teens. And one of the findings of the article was fascinating to me that seemed a bit counterintuitive, is that teens who are more physically active are more prone to engage in vaping. And I was just wondering if you can comment on those findings. I'd love your thoughts.
Yeah, so I would say 30 years ago, I would take that at face value and say, okay, people who are exercising, kids who are exercising are vaping more. We really need to focus on our athletes. But after so many years of working in research, what I did actually was I read that article and I looked at that journal, and actually I know that journal very well. And I kind of stepped back, and I encourage anybody who sees a report in the media to say, you know, to say, what does the actual article say versus what is the interpretation of the article? And so I want to kind of comment on that. So first of all, is the journal. Tobacco Use Insights was the journal. It's an international journal. I've actually published in Tobacco Use Insights. It's an open access journal. So that means that there's no barriers for anybody reading it or having access to the articles that are in it. Versus some journals that you actually have to have a membership, or you have to have some kind of library membership to have access to it. Tobacco Use Insights, you actually have to pay to publish. Sometimes up to $2,000 to publish an article in Tobacco Use Insights. For me as a researcher, it would be sort of that last stop if I'm not getting published in peer-reviewed journal articles. So when I looked at the article and I looked at the journal, I thought, okay, this is an article, this is data from 2018. So they've tried to get this article published probably in other journals. So from that researcher's slant, I'm kind of looking at that. And then I went into the article. It was an impressive sample size, over, 400,000 high schoolers that they took this data from. So it was a kind of like the Florida Youth Tobacco Survey, but it was their Georgia student survey, I think is what they call it. And they sort of took out pieces of that secondary data, so it was data that was already collected, and they took sort of a snapshot. So it was one point in time, they have this data, and it's all self-report. So it's what the students said that they do in terms of physical activity. So, and so I'm kind of setting the stage for actually answering your question. So it was a good sample size. It was a cross-sectional snapshot kind of survey. But I started to ponder, you know, what about physical activity? Is it required in the state of Georgia? Right. So this is high school. These are high schoolers. Mm-hmm. You know, yep. Maybe they're mandated to exercise 5 days a week by their, you know, their the state, the public health, the public state education system. And what I found out was that all the public schools have to provide students in all grades recess for 20 minutes and encourage moderate to vigorous physical activity. And high schoolers in Georgia are required to complete a half a credit of PE education credits. So they're mandated to do physical activity. So when I read the article, I thought, well, this is when the student is asked this question about, do you exercise more than 5 days a week for whatever, 45 minutes of vigorous physical activity, they don't necessarily know their, you know, is it really 45 minutes? Is it 20 minutes? So we don't know if this was a factor in, you know, were most of these kids already doing it because they were mandated to do it? That to the side, what they found in this research is that many of those people who exercised were also vaping. Honestly, I think it doesn't surprise me because I think a lot of kids are vaping, whether they are physically active or whether they're sedentary. And physical activity, I know some of our athletes vape, Okay. And they do it because of the same reason I mentioned earlier. It's that pick me up. It's that hit. It's almost like a caffeine hit. So it's such high levels of nicotine and they're getting addicted. So they're going to continue. But the article compared it to people who just high school students who are dual users, meaning they smoke cigarettes and vape, which we don't see too many high schoolers smoking cigarettes anymore, or to those who smoke cigarettes solely. Okay, so we don't see that either. So I think when you do a comparison like that, you're really, even though they did kind of parcel out things, we really don't see too many students who smoke cigarettes anymore. But to the benefit of the researchers, I'm not surprised by the data. I think that we probably, if we had a study on athletes alone, we'd see that it's pretty prevalent in terms of vaping, and it's the same kids. It's just that they happen to be athletes or they happen to be participating in some kind of sport. They're the same kids that are curious. They want to fit in. All their friends are participating in this behavior.
Yes.
So it's
yes.
just part of what they do. So I think, you know, this article, this research wasn't like they said, what are all the factors that contribute to vape in Georgia high school use? Instead, they parceled out just physical activity. So to me, a stronger research article would have been one that they looked at physical activity. They looked at maybe students who participate, maybe were GPA, maybe their GPA, or maybe they took into other factors to figure out what was the biggest predictor of vaping. So, you know, so my take is I'm not surprised. I think kids are kids, whether they're physically active or not physically active. I think, you know, we have to really kind of look at the article and delve into it a little bit deeper to decide, is the research the best research out there, or is it research that's looking to find something?
The thing that I love best about your response is not so much your commentary on the results, but your evaluation of the research. And I think that's a great lesson for our listeners to really look at the journal itself. And by the way, this is not a condemnation or evaluation of the journal itself. Does pay to play, open access, is this a peer reviewed journal?
Yeah, that's actually a good question. So it is peer reviewed. And so just like Respiratory Care, which is our respiratory therapy journal, peer reviewed, the difference is the reviewers are all from all over the world. So you kind of have a mix versus people who are focused and who have their research strengths in a particular area. It has no impact factor. And I think that's important because impact factor is sort of the score, if you will, that's given to journals. And the score, for those who may be listening that have never heard of that or may not be aware of it, even though Respiratory Care has advertised how high it's going up each year, it doesn't have an impact factor, Tobacco Use Insights, which means that people aren't citing the articles that they read from that journal. And maybe because for whatever reason it may be. Articles that have impact factors are articles or journals, I'm sorry, are journals that are really, it increases the validity of the journal. These are articles that are very strong and they're so good that other authors and researchers are citing those articles from that journal. And the more citations they get, the higher that impact factor goes. So Respiratory Care, I believe, I don't know, 2.7, 2.8, something like that. But Tobacco Use Insights has no impact factor. So to me, the validity of the articles are lower, if you will, than journals that have impact factors. But it is peer-reviewed. They are peer-reviewed, which means that supposedly there's experts in the field that are reviewing the journals. But with COVID, we've had a lot of issues with finding even peer reviewers for respiratory care because people are so saturated with work that a lot of articles, I think maybe in certain fields like public health went to two reviewers instead of three reviewers that it normally would go to.
Interesting. Well, I just appreciate the evaluation of the research to give perspective as to how reliable, how accurate, how valid the data is. And I think that you did a fantastic job of that. And I think the takeaway is that vaping is a problem whether you're sedentary or active, and it's an epidemic in our country. So speaking of that, and so let's assume that we have a lot of listeners on today who are treating patients who are vaping. What resources out there that you might recommend to our listeners that they can share with their patients?
So, good question. And so it kind of depends. So if you're looking at the individual patient, I think as a clinician, we have, as in AARC, the American Association of Respiratory Care, we have that clinical guidelines. We have clinical guidelines for a lot of things, but in particular for treating tobacco dependence. So I highly recommend RTs check out those clinical guidelines. If you're a respiratory therapist and you're not a tobacco treatment specialist, I highly recommend you getting that certification. It's usually like a one-day type of course, but you already have so much background on the respiratory system that it just gives you the skills to be able to better communicate with your patients or your neighbors, if you're helping them, whoever it may be, to quit smoking. So it uses motivational interviewing, which I didn't know until I went into public health what that was, but it's a way to better communicate with the patient so that you're not threatening, that you're actually letting them sort of guide the ship in terms of how fast they want to move and what they want to do to quit smoking. So I think learning about motivational interviewing, I think looking at the tobacco guidelines, using evidence-based for the individual is a good approach. I think if you're a respiratory therapist and you're out in the community, the only evidence-based program that I'm aware of is Catch My Breath, which is a vaping program for schools. So if you're out in the community and working with schools, I would kind of take a look at that and see how you can incorporate that into the school systems. And then if you want to look at sort of that macro picture, policy, right? So meet with legislators. You know, we have advocates in our own profession, but it's an opportunity for you to meet locally with individuals, policymakers, legislators, to just sort of educate them. When I went out to meet with some policymakers when hookah was such an issue and the hookah bars were populating the campus, I went and I met with them and I said, you know, I want to talk about regulating these bars. And the policymaker, the legislator, said to me, "What is hookah?" So I chuckle now and I chuckled then. I was like, so we just need to educate. So it's not that you need to force policy, but you really need to just educate the legislators and people in your own community on vaping and how it's transitioning from not just liquid nicotine to now they're adding THC and Delta 8 and Delta O, and, you know, just to give them a good education and about the ill effects. So how it's affecting the immune system, how it's affecting the airway epithelium. And you can talk in layman's terms, clearly, but letting them know that there are concerns about these behaviors. And even if they're going to allow it in certain buildings, if they do, that, you know, how that secondhand vapor can have also a negative effect.
So, Mary, I love your response to that. And as I had mentioned in my previous question, that vaping is an epidemic in our country, but we're facing a pandemic in COVID-19. Does vaping and its impact on the body, on the lungs, make you more susceptible for a virus like COVID-19 and potentially other viruses that we don't know about that we may face in the years to come?
It's a great question, and it's one that respiratory therapists know, right? So we know that from the research that smoking, how it affects our lungs and how it sort of breaks down our immune system. With vaping, it's really no different. We're seeing the same things. We're seeing, so our airways are meant to protect us, right? It's our innate immune system. And with vaping, we're seeing a breakdown of that immune system. So it's making people more vulnerable to the possibility of viruses invading, bacteria invading. It impairs the lung surfactant. OK, Okay. It causes inflammation and it's toxic to the lungs. So all of this sort of put together in one pot, if you will, puts us in a situation where if an individual is vaping, they are going to be more susceptible if they are exposed to viruses and bacteria, because they're breaking down their body's defense mechanism. They're breaking down their body's ability to fight off off infections and fight off viruses. So, you know, I think there's more and more research coming out on this with individuals who have utilized these products during COVID-19. And I think, you know, the best thing we can tell people is just breathe fresh air, right? I mean, it's just,
I love that.
You don't have to inhale anything but fresh air and you'll feel really good. Just exercise.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Fantastic. I love that a lot. So this article that you had talked about, Tobacco Use Insights, was really focused on adolescents and teens and their activity levels. Is that the heaviest users of vaping in our and the public today, or is it much more older, mature adults?
So I think our concerns are with the youth and young adults. So I know that doesn't really totally answer your question, but I think in terms of the heaviest users that are of concern are the youth and young adults. And it stems back to what I said earlier about the brain and the brain development. I think those older adults who are utilizing it, many are using it to quit smoking. Many are using it to add other products. So it's a new way to inhale Delta 9 THC. Right? It's a new way to do that. But honestly, my concern is with the kids, the youth and young adults, and it's becoming younger and younger and younger. There's something now that's out there saying how these youngest kids are actually finding vape pods on the ground and collecting them and then reusing them.
Oh my gosh.
Because they don't have access to them. They're not quite at the age to know to actually, you know, get it, buy it from an older child or older kid. So it's kind of scary. And so I think there's really no one segment, but the segment of concern is the younger.
Yeah, I totally appreciate that. Well, Mary, we're pushing up against our the bottom of the hour here. And I want to thank you for coming on. This topic is fascinating to me. I believe it is for our listeners out there. We could make this a 4-hour podcast. You could have a dedicated podcast to this and with a different topic each week. So we're just literally touching the surface here on what we could talk about, but it spans from legislation. It spans to whether or not we can get coverage for cessation counseling that respiratory therapists provide. There's a lot that we could talk about, but I do have one last quick question, and that I suspect there are a number of listeners out there who have epidemic level issues within their own communities or within their own hospitals, yet they don't have cessation counseling programs. They don't know how to start to be able to go ahead and provide resources and education and support to their patients because it's just not an organized effort at their hospital. For those listeners, what would your advice be?
It's a really good question, and it really depends on the state that they're in, because many states have funding where they can get access to free products. So I think what I would recommend is to reach out to the Department of Health. I would reach out to the state level tobacco groups to see if there are already free resources out there and how they can sort of partner with the hospitals. So for instance, in Florida, we have funding to help people quit smoking, and the hospitals have partnered with the area health education centers to be able to provide the free products to the individuals once they leave the hospital. So those who are in the hospital are probably getting the patch, right? If they're smokers or vapers, but when they leave, what happens? What happens afterwards? So I think it's a matter of finding out who in the community and the state might have free resources. I think that would be the first step. Second step would be to go to like smokefree.gov. So that's a great resource and website that gives individuals some just free pamphlets and free information and resources to help them kind of figure out where to go from there. I would also communicate with other states. You know, when we have these respiratory care conferences, it gives us the opportunity to talk to people in other states to see how they're doing it there, but have those conversations. You know, to me, if respiratory care had sort of this open session where, you know, what are you doing in your state for policy for cessation, whether it be vape or cigarettes, and what are you doing, that people could share ideas and learn from each other, I think is extremely valuable. And then I'll step back to sort of that clinical guidelines to treating tobacco dependence for, you know, for your own individual knowledge in your hospital. I think also the Surgeon General's website. So if you Google Surgeon General vape resources, provide some great tip sheets that I would utilize for parents. You know, here's, if a parent comes in and say you're doing a PFT on a child or a young adult, you know, give them these tip sheets or have them available in the offices so that they can learn that, you know, these are ways to approach a child or a teen or a youth about vape. So off the cuff, those are my recommendations.
Well, Mary, I appreciate that. Just, I know I said one last question, but I truly do have one more question. And that is, I think I mentioned at the onset of the podcast that you are, you know, probably one of the, if not the foremost experts on this topic in the country. For people who might want to reach out to you for counsel, for advice, What's the best way for them to reach out to you? Do you have a social channel or an email that you'd be willing to share?
Yeah, so I have an email, and the best way to reach me is through my University of Tampa. If you look up, you could even Google University of Tampa, Mary Martinasek, and my email pops right up. And that's probably the best way because I'm on emails 24/7 anymore. And that way we can figure out what is the best way to communicate or what, you know, how can I get you information that will help you and resources that can help you if you're unable to find those. And I'm happy to help anyone. I think the more we help each other, the more we share resources that we know about, the better we're going to make our communities and the healthier, hopefully, we're going to make our kids.
Well, we live in a connected world these days, and I hope that this podcast might be successful in connecting some aspiring clinicians who want to specialize in this space, much like yourself, to connect with you, because I know that you'll be able to give them some great advice. Mary, thanks so much for joining us today. It was a true privilege to spend the last 30, 35 minutes with you today, and look forward to having you back on the show sometime soon.
Thank you very much for having me.
And thanks to all of our listeners for listening to AARC Perspectives podcasts today. We really appreciate it. And just remember, when you can't breathe, nothing else matters. Thanks so much, everyone. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to AARC Perspectives. Be sure to check out our show notes page for information about today's episode, as well as links to our other podcast episodes. Be sure to know when our next episode airs by subscribing to our podcast. Until next time, my friends, keep on supporting the respiratory therapy profession.